So when like 50,000 of them show up all at once, it's pretty like overwhelming. It's like, here they all are. And somebody I was talking to said, we were all hugging each other. He said, well, you know, I don't ask you to do that, you know, but they just feel like that. So it really is very powerful. Hello, I'm Paul McCartney in the studio, part two.
Paul McCartney is back in the USA, selling out the nation's arenas, often staying over for multiple nights, and receiving warm receptions and reviews from audiences and critics alike. His late first wife and bandmate, Linda, was a high-profile vegetarian and animal rights activist, and that tradition extends all the way to the day-to-day meals on Paul McCartney's tour for the huge support crew, as he told me in the studio.
The scientists suddenly discovered this hole in the ozone layer. And I'm like everyone else. I saw it on the news, you know, and you go, oh, that doesn't look too clever. And I think it was the first time any of us realized physically what we're doing to the world. I think when you spray crops, you know, the farmers or the government scientists will say, no, there is no risk and do not worry. Yes, a few people have died, but, you know, and as long as it's not you or your family, you're not too worried and you can kind of put it off.
It's always the other guy.
It's always the other guy and it'll always get fixed. Right. Some government will come along. They'll fix
Who
it for
is
us.
Who is they, right?
Well, you know, exactly. And then you suddenly realize, wait a minute, they didn't stop this 50-mile hole in the sky. Now, that sounds a bit dangerous to me. And the idea of suddenly the planet really taking a bit of a plummet and suddenly, you know, some of these things they've been saying for years actually coming to be, I suppose it kind of frightened me. You know, I've got kids, and anyway, even if it wasn't for the kids, you know, I've got to breathe. So has the man from Exxon, and, you know, they've all got to breathe and they've all got to live here. So we just thought, well, we're coming out on tour. It's going to be great. We're going to play to the people. We're going to be seeing our audiences smiling and having great fun and making music. But it'd be really nice if after the whole thing's over, we can kind of sit back and say, hey, you know, we really did something else on this tour. We really made everywhere we've gone, we've had this message. And, you know, I've tried to not get it boring. Because, you know, I know it's a bit, these issues, you know, if you're a kid particularly, it's like, oh my God, you know. Yeah. It really is spread bringing it home to other people too. I mean, I don't think I'm alone in this. I think, you know, everywhere we go, even when we went to Japan, people said, well, look, it's not a popular thing out here, you know, because like they still go whaling and everything. And that's people true. Are saying, save the whales. The Japanese are still out there, you know, gunning them down.
That's right.
You know.
But
I said, well, you know, it's tough. I'm still going to say it and we'll see what happens. So I think it's got to come for us all, really, you know, and I'm just happy to be saying it. We don't really go on about it too much on the tour. I figure people want it anyway. But I'm just making sure the governments know that we want it. You know, it's our tour kind of thing. It's we're part of the promotion. So it really would go against everything we stand for if we had to buy in meat every day. So what happened was we said, look, anyone who wants to come to our canteen, it just happens to be vegetarian. In fact, we've got a lot of converts on the crew. They said, geez, I didn't know. And get every little sort of thing we know about. And there's like meat substitutes. And half the people don't even know they're eating, not eating meat. Because it's, you know, it's pretty convincing, some of the stuff. Particularly you can get from America. Some real good stuff. Anyway, the promoter got back to me. He said, like you said, you've got some guys out there 6'7". I mean, these guys are pumped up, you know. They like, you know, they don't eat it. They just throw it in their heads, you know, and it, you know, they just kind of absorb it like a sponge. No, anyway, you know, and I said, well, I know about that. I said, I'll tell you what, though. I said, anyone who wants to eat like that, they're going to have to just pay for it themselves. That's the thing. So if they want to eat for nothing, they eat vegetarian. I said, anyway, now here, hold on a minute. I said, what's the strongest, nearest to man, animals in the kingdom? What do you like, a male gorilla, you know, and you see in those programs, you see this guy pumped up with his steroids, those whacking great male gorillas. Well, they eat leaves. They're not carnivores, you know. So I said, well, I'll match any one of these riggers against my male gorilla any day. And you know, you don't have to do that to be pumped up. It's a fallacy. But the thing is, you know, it's just because how we were all raised by our mums and dads. I'm the same. You know, it's our tradition. And what's interesting is it's changing. Our traditions are changing. You know, half of what we know now didn't exist when we were kids. And so I think it's an interesting idea for the future, personally. You know, it's interesting on a lot of levels. You've got the economic level. You know, it's kind of, you know, you have to have like 3 fields of grain to actually, you know, feed cattle and stuff. Whereas, you know, if you edit direct, it's kind of cheaper and stuff. And there are a lot of very interesting facts like that from some of the people we meet.
The Beatles were the first rock and roll band to get that admonishment, your life is not your own now, because now you're a role model for kids. Decades later, as a father himself of an extended family, Paul McCartney still remembers how that felt.
I always used to hate that feeling because people used to say to us in the early Beatle days, you know, do you feel responsible because there's kids out there screaming and staying out late because of you and all this? And I was saying, I hate that idea. Why am I responsible for them? I'm just some singer, you know. But of course, you know, as you grow up and then you get kids of your own and you start to realize what those parents were worried about.
Models, right?
Yeah, you know, they're kind of worried about that. And I can see it now with kids of my own. I still wouldn't figure any entertainer was responsible for my kids' well-being. That's me. That's the parents, right. You know, or the kids themselves.
Right.
But I do understand a little bit more now. And so as far as, like, the Friends of the Earth thing's gone, I thought, well, it'd be great to get in touch with them, see how they'd feel about us kind of promoting them on this tour. So they've got lots of new members. They're getting on with it. And there's a lot of reaction, apparently, in the governments and stuff. And I think, you know, in future elections, I think you'll see a lot of people voting for cleaning this place up.
Oh, I hope you're right. And
you know,
I really...
Well, come on, let's face it, man. You get a weekend off. You've worked hard all week. You go up to some canyon or something where there's a lake or something. And they suddenly, there's a thing posted, you can't swim in here. I mean, that's not
because
where we want to go, is
no,
it? You know?
No.
And I don't know anyone who wants to go in that direction. So I think, you know, we've got probably, to my way of thinking, the most beautiful planet in the universe. I mean, I haven't seen anything better yet. You know, the moon's got a lot of yellow dust. Mars has got a lot of red dust. Off the others are like ice or, you know, gases and stuff. You couldn't even stand on them.
I guess we're stuck.
And we got
taking care of this one.
Look at this. What we've got. We've got trees. You've got grass. You've got lakes. You've got this incredible mountain air or whatever. And so we mustn't goof it up, you know, it's just too precious. Welcome back. In the studio, I'm Paul McCartney with Redbeard himself.
Thank you again, Paul. McCartney is frankly surprised by how little his attitudes have changed and how little rock and roll and popular music have changed since he and his mop-top mates from Liverpool first landed on U.S. soil back in 1964.
Not as much as I would have thought, actually. You know, I expected at some point to grow up. This has not happened. Rather fortunately, if you ask me.
Okay.
Because, you know, I mean, I don't see an awful lot of point in sort of so-called growing up. You know, although it's getting serious and getting mad at everyone. I mean, I've still got a lot of what maybe some other people would call childish interests. You know, like my music. I'm still as into it as I was when I was 15 and younger than that. In fact, you know, our kids are sometimes saying to us, look, Dad, I mean, you're supposed to be like the straight ones.
You're making us
we're
look bad,
supposed
right?
to be. You know, they say, look, you're the hippies, you guys. You know, what is all this? And I say, well, hang loose, chill out, be all right. You know, be cool. In fact, we got a great relationship with them. We're lucky, actually. You know, they're real good kids. And it's, I think, you know, just... you kind of can understand young people a little better, maybe, you know, if you're lucky to have some good kids and you're the parent. What I love is there's never been any big weird thing on the music front, which I expect there to be.
You might wonder why Paul McCartney continues to subject himself to the rigors of touring and to questions from journalists such as me. Here's what he told me in the studio.
I need to tour just because when you make music, that's how you start out, with some form of touring, you know, little clubs. You then get bigger and bigger and bigger, like with the Beatles, and then you get to America, you get worldwide recognition, if you're lucky, you know. And we did all of that. So it's really a huge part of my life is touring, you know. It's something that I'm very used to. And lately I've kind of thought, well, you know, maybe I'll just make records and stuff and just hang out at home. That's nice too. You know, I like that too. But we a year or so ago, a couple of years ago, we said, well, you know, it might be really good to kind of get out on tour. And I must say, I'm really enjoying it. You know, it's something that I'm used to. I know, you know, I it's just kind of natural to me.
Even if you saw Paul McCartney perform Live and Let Die on television at the halftime of the Super Bowl, nothing prepares you for experiencing the over-the-top pyrotechnic production of that song live. McCartney continues his explanation to my question, why does he tour even though he is one of the richest entertainers in the world?
And the real great thing, as you say, I don't need to do it to eat, but in a way, kind of spiritually, the feedback you get from the audience is very special. I mean, you make your records for the guy or the girl to put on when they get home, you know, or in the car or something. And you always make your records with that person in mind, kind of, you know, the fictitious listener that you're trying to please. So when like 50,000 of them show up all at once, it's pretty like overwhelming. It's like, here they all are. And somebody I was talking to said, we were all hugging each other. He said, and I was saying, well, you know, I don't ask you to do that, you know, but they just feel like that. So it really is very powerful.